There are likely a few people watching this thinking, like, they really can't quit smoking. Or you may be thinking about another person you know who just, it's impossible for them to quit smoking. They just smoke so much, they smoke so long, there's no way they can quit. I think it's crucial that people realize anybody can quit smoking. I don't care how long a person smokes, I don't care how much they smoke per day, anybody can quit smoking. They need to have the proper motivation that's right for them to do it, but anyone can do it. I have met so many people who, when they came in, who knew it was impossible. There was no way they were ever going to quit, and they were able to pull it off. I'm going to tell a story about a woman I had in one of my earliest clinics. It was probably my third, fourth clinic. It was probably around 1977, so it's coming up on close to 30 years when this incident occurred. I had a woman come the first day of a stop smoking clinic, and she was there before anybody else was in the room, and she asked if I'm the person running the program, and I said, yes, I'm Joel, I'll be conducting this clinic. And she said, do we have to talk during the clinic? Do we have to participate? And I said, no, you don't have to. You know, I kind of go around the room and try to get people to introduce themselves and tell their stories about, how much they smoked, how long they smoked, why they're quitting now, how it's going day by day. But, it's kind of an optional thing. And she said, well, I don't really want to talk at all. She said, I'm here to quit smoking. I want to learn everything I can. I will quit. I promise. I'm extremely dedicated to quit smoking, but I don't want to talk. I don't want you to call on me. And I said, well, sure, that's fine. You don't have to talk. But and I tried to make it a little bit more inviting to her. I said, well, but if something comes up and you feel like you would like to add in, or, you just kind of want to participate at some point, I want you to feel free to join in. And she got mad when I said that. I mean, really mad. She looked at me and she said, well, maybe I'm not making myself clear. She says, I don't want to talk. I don't want you to call on me. I don't want to participate. She said, if you look in my direction with an inquisitive look on your face, I'm walking out of this room. She says, I'm here to quit smoking. I don't want to talk to other people about it. I don't want to burden anybody else with my problems. I am just here to quit smoking. And she's mad that she's saying this. And I said, fine, you don't have to talk. You don't have to talk. Every day after that, when I was signing her in, I told her where to sit, because I knew I would usually go around the room and get people to introduce, but I would start at one end, and I often wouldn't make it to the other end, so I always would try to put her at the other end. And even when I was speaking, I was trying to be careful not to look in her direction by mistake, and make it look like I'm doing this in an inquisitive way. I didn't know her story. I didn't know her situation. I was just trying to honor her request. I didn't want to scare her off from being in the clinic. I mean, she was here to quit smoking, and she said she's going to do it, but she just couldn't talk. I thought maybe it was a stage fright thing. I didn't know. I just didn't know what the situation was. She did make the comment about not burdening anybody else, and I didn't even think about that strongly at the time that she said it. It was something that I let go, and that was hopefully going to be the end of it as far as I was concerned. I wasn't going to do anything to push her into speaking now. We had a situation in this clinic. She comes in every day. She comes in every day and she signs her, she signs in. She talks to me. She talks to me before the meeting, but she's not talking while the group is there. We had a situation. We had two women in this clinic who were really annoying. And what I mean by really annoying, they would sit in the back of the room. This started from day one. And they would gab with each other, just talk and talk and laugh. And, and it was really a problem in the beginning where, people were, we had about, the first day of the clinic, we probably had about 25 people. I don't remember the exact number of the count. And on a day-by-day basis, there's different numbers of people. Well, there's probably about 25 people on the first day. And the first day is an introductory session. And we don't even count that generally. It's people who come in, find out what the program is like, and determine whether they want to come in or not. We count our numbers of who joins the clinic, and we're normally doing, who was really in that clinic. So I think on the second day we had 20 people. The first day we had 25. And the first day of the clinic, the room was pretty filled. It was a pretty much capacity of the room was about 25. And every seat was taken. And these two women were just talking incessantly. And people around them would turn to them and go, shh. And they'd shut up for maybe, 5-10 seconds. It started up again while I was doing my lecture the first day. And the first day, it's a lot of me doing a lecture more than even group participation. And even when I hear it at some points, and I'm pretty far away in the front of the room, and I would say, can we hold it down in the back? Let's not have me talking. And I held real clout. If I said it, it was 20 or 30 seconds before they started. But we just finally gave up. These women would not be quiet. I don't think they heard most of what we were talking about. You know, they were talking to each other. They do join the next day. Both of those women do. The woman who wasn't going to talk joins the next day. We had 20 people in this particular clinic who actually, you know, came in and enrolled in the program. It was funny because these two women never stopped talking every day. When they were in the room, they always sat in the back right corner. And the group, they were gravitating as far away from them as possible. It's like everybody's moving up as close to the front and as far as to the left as they can. So there was just like this little pocket in the back of the room where these two women were sitting. It was obvious to everybody, I mean everyone except probably them, that nobody wanted to be by them. You know, they were really irritating. And again, day by day, they kept on doing this. They kept on talking. People were now sharing their stories. People were now introducing themselves. You know, the group was getting to know each other. These two women almost weren't part of it. They were signing in every day. They weren't smoking. You know, and I think a few of the times I asked, you know, really, you probably should be listening to the group. It just didn't seem to help. They were just going to talk. And I just gave up on them. But they weren't smoking. I didn't want to kick them out for that purpose. The third day of the clinic, Thursday night, we have a real dramatic situation occur. We were doing this program at a college campus, and most of the people were community-based people. They were adults, but there were a few of the college students there, so they were pretty young. We had a girl come in who was a college student, and she was visibly shaken to a point that you could just see there was something really wrong. Now, again, sometimes you see things like that, and you just think, oh, it's because she was in withdrawal, but this was beyond, and you can see it. She comes in, and she comes in front of the group. She says, I can't stay. My brother was killed today, and it was an auto accident. This isn't the type of thing that they had time to really consider what was going to happen or, you know, the time to process the information. She said, my parents right now are at a funeral home. I'm supposed to be there helping them. You know, they're picking out a casket for my brother. And she explains how close she was with her brother. They were extremely close. They were close in age. And she was traumatized by this. She said she came to this meeting because she still didn't want to be a smoker. And she didn't want to use this as a reason to lose this quit. And she knew she had to be here just to reinforce her resolve. And when she's telling her story, I mean, she's very upset, and you can just tell. I mean, and again, it was logical, having nothing to do with quitting smoking. This girl was traumatized, what was going on, and she said she couldn't stay, and again, she was talking about her relationship with her brother. She's crying at this point, and all of a sudden, on the back of the room, we hear laughing. It was just the most surreal event, because everybody heard it. And again, you have to understand what was going on here. These women weren't laughing at this girl. These women had no idea what this girl was talking about. They weren't paying attention to what was happening on a regular basis, and they were missing what was really a powerful story going on at this point, and a melodrama that was in a sense playing out here. The girl had to leave. She said, I've got to go. I won't smoke. I don't know if I'll be able to get here tomorrow. She's going to try. And she leaves the room. Well, we talk a few minutes longer. We may have even talked a little bit about what happened here, about how, it's just important that people realize that no matter what is going on around them, life goes on when a person quits smoking. And if you can get through something with a cigarette, you're also going to get through without a cigarette. We had actually moved on, though, onto some other topics. And the women in the back were still making quite a bit of noise. And then all of a sudden, I'm in the middle of a story. I don't remember what the story I was on. I don't remember what we were talking about at the point. But the woman who wasn't going to say a word from the first day of this clinic stands up with a certain presence and a certain power, and says, Joel, can I talk right now? Very loud, very clear. It looked rude to anybody in that room because she was interrupting as I was talking in all likelihood. She was just basically interrupting me. And this is what it would appear like, and just stood up with this tremendous presence. And you could see she needed and wanted to talk. Now, the rest of the group, like I say, may have thought like this was rude. They didn't know who this woman was. She was there every day, but she was low-key. She kept out of the way. She never joined in on any conversation. So, I don't think people even really noticed her in a way. I was working pretty hard at making sure that was going to happen just by the way I was directing questions and the way I was, dealing with the room. I told her where to sit, like I said, to avoid looking in her direction by mistake. I knew where she was. Well, she stands up and takes control of the room. Now, I shut up instantly. She says, I need to talk right now. And I said, sure. I wanted to know what she was going to say. Keep in mind, I didn't know anything more than the group did. All she told me was she wasn't going to talk. I knew that piece of information. She looks at the group and she tells her name and she says, I'm here to quit smoking. She said, also, you need to know right now, I have terminal lung cancer. I'm going to be dead within 2 months, no matter what I do right now. If I quit smoking, I will die. If I don't quit smoking, I'm going to die. I am here to quit smoking. She said, you may wonder why I'm here to quit smoking, if I'm going to die anyway. Well, I have a reason. She says, I have 3 children. And when my children were young, they all bugged me about my smoking. All of them. They just pestered me over and over again. Mommy, please quit smoking. Mommy, please quit smoking. I heard this their early years from every one of them. And I kept on telling them, Mommy wants to quit, but she can't. Mommy wants to quit, but she can't. I said that over and over to all 3 of my kids, every time they would give me a hard time about my smoking. 2 of her kids have now in the interim become smokers. They were adult children now. She said, I got this cancer. I was stunned. My kids had stopped bugging me about my smoking years earlier. And she said she was thrilled. She was thrilled when the kids stopped bothering her. They were in their early adolescence, or maybe they were, a little bit older than that even, but they finally stopped bugging her. And she thought this was great. When they stopped bugging her about the smoking, she could smoke in peace. She didn't have to feel the guilt. She didn't have to feel the anxiety of this pestering, incessant pestering of these little kids telling her not to smoke, and Mommy wants to quit, but she can't. Her standard line. She said, when I found out I had lung cancer, they were, I think, originally hoping that it was operable. There was something they can do. She says she goes in for surgery. 2 of the 3 kids are at the hospital. She goes in for the surgery, and in a sense, they opened her up and closed her up. When they saw the extent, they didn't think it was going to be as big as it was, and they realized this is inoperable. There's nothing they can do. She's in the recovery room. The doctor comes in. She's in recovery room, and doctor comes in and says what it is. He says, we couldn't do, what we had discussed, the procedures we were discussing. It's advanced. We can't surgically resect this thing out. And he basically gave her the prognosis, even at that point, that, she had months and probably 2 months left. It may not be that long. As soon as the doctor said this to her, she said her children's name by name to the doctor, I need to see, these 2 kids now. Well, she's in the recovery room, and they're not going to let family members in. But he said, as soon as we get you back to the room, I will get them in. It was a while later. It was probably quite a while later before they brought her into the room. And when they bring her in, the son comes into the room. The daughter isn't there at this point. The son comes in, and the mother looks at him and says what the doctor has now told her, that they opened her up, they closed her up, it was inoperable, that she's going to be dead within 2 months, and that this was a smoking-induced type of lung cancer. The doctor kind of made that clear to her, that this was caused by smoking. And she said, for God's sake, look what smoking has done to me. For God's sake, will you please, please quit smoking? He said, when the doctor came out a while earlier and talked to him and the sister and told them what had happened already, he gave them the diagnosis, he gave them the prognosis, and then the doctor had left, and the son said he was sitting there with the sister, and they were both talking about this. They were both shocked. They were stunned. He realized that they were just given a death sentence on the mother, and he said they were very upset, both of them. The daughter couldn't come in. She was. She may have still been in the hospital, but he said she wasn't ready to come in and talk yet. And the mother understood, but he said they were both sitting and talking about this after the doctor had left and before they were able to get into the room. They were sitting and talking about how much they, how horrible this is. Look what smoking has done to Mom. How we both want to quit smoking. We both want to quit smoking. And he says, he looks at her straight, and he wasn't doing this purposely. He said, we both realize we want to quit smoking, but we can't. And she said, as soon as she heard the comment, as soon as she heard him say those words, it went through her like a knife. She knew where he learned that comment. It was all that time when he was a little kid and his siblings were little kids. And she kept saying, Mommy wants to quit, but she can't. Mommy wants to quit, but she can't. Now she realized why they stopped bugging her when they got older. Why bother bugging her? Mom wants to quit, but she can't. It wasn't worth any more effort. That's what he, what he learned from this lesson. And she said, as soon as I heard that, I knew I had to quit smoking. I had to undo this lesson. It's going to cost me my life. I don't want to cost me my kid's life. She said, I had to undo that lesson. I came to the clinic because I wanted to find the easiest way to quit. I wanted to find the least painful. I've gone through so much pain already, I don't think anything's going to measure to what I'm going through, you know, dealing with what I'm dealing with in life right now. But I did want to find the easiest way, the most successful way. I wanted to find the thing that was least painful. She said, I came to the group. I told Joel the first day of this clinic that I didn't want to talk. I told him, and she repeated what she said to me. She said, if he looked in my direction with an inquisitive look on his face, I was walking out. And I meant it when I said it. I wasn't going to talk. I didn't want to burden any of you with my problem. She said, I did want to see people who had a chance to save their lives. She started to say this. She said, if I knew 20 years ago what I know now, you know, what it was going to do. And she stopped. She didn't follow through with that story. She was bright enough to recognize that if you had told her 20 years ago, well, it was 20 years later, so she wouldn't care, or she just wouldn't have believed it. So she didn't even go that direction. She dropped that mid-sentence. She didn't discuss that further. She said, I did want to see people, though, who could save their lives. And she said, I really feel close to a lot of you. I said, I know I haven't talked to you. I haven't said a word to any of you. But she started repeating stories that other people were telling in earlier days and how she really was rooting for these people, even though she did it in total silence. She said, she started bringing up things that people had talked about. She said, I wasn't going to talk, though. I wasn't going to say a word. She said, but today I have to talk. She said, let me tell you why I have to talk. She turns beet red. She's mad. She turns to the back of the room where the two ladies are sitting, the back right corner, and she looks at them and says, I've been forced to listen to you two bitches for the last 3 days. You are driving me nuts. You just talk incessantly. You're not listening to a thing going on in the group. And then she ripped into them. She said, you didn't hear what happened before, did you? There was a girl who came in. Her brother was killed. She's upset. She's crying. And there's laughter in the back of the room. She was furious when this happened. She didn't say a word at this point, though. You know, she was holding this in, and it was building in her. She said, you two don't belong here. You should both go out there and smoke for all I care. You should go out there and drop dead for all I care. And she's attacking into these people. And you could see, they're stunned. They're white. They were hearing her story because she stood up with such presence and such power. She took control of the room when she started talking. Now, they're listening to her story about, you know, her terminal lung cancer and not realize where it's heading into them. They're white. You could almost see, though, they're about to retaliate because this was a direct attack like I've never seen in the clinic before of a person going after other people in the group. And they were about to retaliate, but then all of a sudden they realized, she's got terminal lung cancer. She's dying. You know, you can't attack a dying person. And they were just there, and they were stunned and didn't know what to do next. And I interceded at this point. I had to calm this situation down. What was funny, though, was the other people in the group, they're stunned. I mean, you got to understand what happened over these last few minutes. This girl comes in and her brother is killed and she's telling her story. And then this woman stands up and starts telling about this terminal lung cancer, how she's dying and this dramatic story about her kids. And I mean, it's just like, I think everybody was emotionally so tied into what was going on. And then the attack that went on in this room. And now you can see these people were almost... They were ready to applaud at what was going on here because they were also ticked with these women for the last few days. I calmed the room down. I got the women to, in a sense, to stay at the same time to understand they're not talking anymore. There's not a word that's going to be heard from the back of the room. And, you know, they knew it. They were going to honor that request. By the last day of the clinic, everyone had made peace, everybody. We have a graduation ceremony. And the two women who were the gabs in the clinic, I mean, they were applauded along with everybody else. And again, I think people really kind of came to terms with, you know, what occurred that day. One of the highlights of that graduation session, though, the woman with terminal lung cancer, she comes in, she's beaming, just absolutely beaming. She said, when she comes up to graduate, and she says, I got to introduce you all to someone. See, the graduation has opened up to family and friends. And a lot of people bring in family and friend members, you know, just to, you know, root them on. She says, I got to introduce you all to someone. She calls up her son. She, you know, introduces him to the group. She says, the day I was telling you this story, he had not known I'd quit smoking. She hadn't told anybody she was quitting smoking. She didn't tell anybody she was going to a clinic. I mean, again, I'm not exactly sure how she covered this because she was coming day by day. And whether she told them she was going to the hospital or she was going to something, she never told them she was quitting smoking. She said she knew she was going to quit. She knew she was going to quit. But there was that little bit of fear, a little bit of fear. What if she didn't pull it off? What if she told them she was going to try and fail? And now she was going to even make that lesson stronger to the, you know, to the children that she wanted to quit but couldn't. She said, so I didn't say a word. About a week after she quit, people started noticing, and the son noticed. And he said, you're not smoking. And she said, I've been off a week. And he looked at her, and she said, you could just see it in his face. He was stunned when I said it, and he said, oh, man, if you quit smoking for a week, I'm going to quit smoking. And he stopped smoking right there and then. And when she came to the graduation, she introduced him. The daughter had not quit at this point, and I don't know the status of whatever happened with the daughter as far as the smoking. The son did pull it off, though. I was calling the follow-up that group 6 weeks later. It was after the graduation. It was a month after the graduation, and the graduation was 2 weeks into the quit, so she's now been off 6 weeks. So 6 week follow-up, and when I called her house, the son was who answered and said that she had just passed away. It was like the day before that she had passed away. And this wasn't a great shock. They said maybe 2 months, but, you know, when someone gives a diagnosis like that or a prognosis, there's variability. It can go a little bit longer, a little bit shorter. He said one of the last things she said to me was, you see, I was able to stay off smoking. That was important to her, even at this point in time, her deathbed. And she knew it was close to the end, and she wanted that message out to her son. And he said he appreciated that message. You know, he has not smoked, and he was sticking with this. I normally tell people, you can't quit for family or friends. You got to quit for yourself. Yeah, other people will benefit by your not smoking, but you got to quit for yourself. This woman was quitting for her children. She was trying to undo a lesson that she had drilled into them for a very long time, and she successfully pulled this off with her son anyway, that it was possible to quit smoking. But the other lesson, which is a general lesson here, all those years she was a smoker, she believed she had to smoke. She believed she couldn't quit smoking. She proved it was true. It was untrue. She was able to quit smoking. She did quit smoking. She didn't do it in time to save her life. She did do it in time to affect her kids' ability to save their lives. So again, the bottom line here, I don't care how long a person has smoked. I don't care how much they smoke. And in this respect, I don't care how sick they are. It is possible for them to quit smoking. It is possible for anybody to quit smoking. And it is possible for everybody to stay off smoking if they simply make a commitment and stick to that commitment to never take another puff.